All right. Welcome to Planning Commission meeting tonight, September 13th. We are glad to have you all with us and those of you who are joining us remotely. We will move right into our agenda to public comments. Any comments not pertaining to agenda items, this would be the time for that. And seeing as there are none, we will move to item number 3, consideration of an update to the moderate income housing elements of the city's general plan. And we will turn the time over to Allie.
Thank you. Hopefully y'all can hear me okay. So in state code, the state requires that we prepare a general plan. All cities have to prepare a general plan to address the present and future needs of the city and to guide growth and development. One of the requirements in the general plan is to have an element or a chapter of the general plan be regarding moderate income housing or affordable housing. In state code, they require 3 things right now that need to be included in that. It needs to provide a realistic opportunity to meet the need for additional moderate income housing within the next 5 years. It needs to select 3 or more moderate income housing strategies, which they have a whole list of different strategies. I think there's like 26 strategies you can use. And it needs to include an implementation plan and some benchmarks as to like what you're going to do as far as implementation and when you intend to do it. And then the city is required to report to the state annually about the progress of the moderate income housing element. So that is due now in October. They've recently changed that. And this year, they require that the strategies be worded exactly the same as they are in state code. So this year, we already were in compliance, but we just really need to amend it to include those benchmarks and the implementation plan, and then rewording our strategies so they match state code. Next year, they're going to be requiring more reporting. And so the plan for city staff, we plan to update the entire general plan next year. We're going to apply for some grant funding this fall to see if we can update the entire general plan, which would include the moderate income housing element. So we didn't update any of the data this year. We just updated those implementation strategies in an attempt to comply with state code in regards to reporting. So I'll just kind of walk you through the changes that we're proposing. Everything that's underlined is new. If it doesn't have an underline, it was already in the code or already in the plan. So strategy or goal 1 is to increase opportunities for low to moderate income households to purchase affordable housing. And we had a couple strategies for this one. One is to work with the Davis Community Housing Authority. They have programs like a first-time home buyer program and a down payment assistance program, family self-sufficiency program. And so we're constantly referring people over to those programs with the housing authority. And so we want to continue to do that, refer people over, and also advertise their programs on our social media and city websites so that we can direct our residents to those programs. The second strategy was to inventory sites for consideration of rezoning, especially those within close proximity to public transit, that to see if they might be more appropriate for more diverse owner-occupied housing options. And so the implementation strategy we put in there was to create an inventory of sites that are appropriate for the rezoning. It's basically repeating the same thing to see if we have some owner-occupied opportunities in the city that we're not maximizing yet. And the timing we put on that one is 2022 to 2025. We think we can make that inventory at least within the next 3 years. Next slide. Goal number 2 is to increase affordable rental opportunities for low to moderate income households. So the first strategy was to work with the Davis Community Housing Authority. They have a Section 8 housing voucher program, housing choice voucher program for renters that are lower income. they have a backlog of last I talked to them, which was probably a year ago, they had a backlog of 2 years for the Section 8 housing voucher program, which is really tragic. So we want to continue to refer people over to that program and advertise their programs on the city website, social media, just like we did with the owner-occupied options. Strategy two is to create or allow for, this is a new one, create or allow for and reduce regulations to internal or detached accessory dwelling units in residential zones. This is one of those that just needed to be reworded. The implementation strategy is what we actually had, which was to continue to promote the establishment of accessory dwelling units, such as basement apartments, to increase the supply of affordable rental units and assist cost-burdened homeowners. And then I added, this could be accomplished through continuing to provide free permits for existing ADUs and promoting legalizing ADUs on the city's website and social media. And that's annual, ongoing, all the time. Strategy 2.3 was to promote the construction of housing units across all income categories to facilitate the natural attrition of existing housing stock to become available for low to moderate income households. And I added implementation of creating an inventory of the housing stock in the city and consider rezoning where appropriate to allow for a good balance of diverse housing options. I think there are some areas in the city, for example, where duplexes may be appropriate but are not allowed. And so that's specifically what I was thinking about when considering an inventory of rezoning. Strategy 2.4, demonstrate utilization of a moderate income housing set aside from a community reinvestment agency, redevelopment agency, or community development and renewal agency to create or subsidize moderate income housing. That's new. But it's a new strategy, but it's something we're already doing. We have CDA funding, the US 89 CDA, for example, we've used to pay for some infrastructure for housing projects for lower income housing, like City's Edge. We got some units designated as lower income units in exchange for, I think, sidewalk or burying power lines or something. And then the on that would just be to use the set aside funds from the US 89 CDA to incentivize moderate income housing developments in the town center. And I put 2022 to 2027 because it's something that we're constantly doing, and it's based mostly on development schedules. Strategy 2.5 would be to amend land use regulations to allow for single room occupancy developments. And the implementation would be to accomplish that through the adoption of the town center form-based code to explicitly allow for single room occupancy developments in the town center. I think that got cut off, but it should say in the town center. So we have a development that's under review right now that's doing just this thing. And so it'd be really easy for us to check that one off the list. You can go ahead to the next slide. Goal three, and you can see in red, I added one, and that's been since the staff report. So I would recommend that you include this as an amendment to the plan in your recommendation to the City Council. But goal three is to rehabilitate existing housing to increase rental opportunities, homeownership, retention, and reinvestment in North Salt Lake. We already had strategy 3.1, which is promoting, again, the Housing Authority's emergency repair program. We, for a number of years, ran a similar program simultaneously through the city, which was our home repair grant program. And that was to assist lower income homeowners to stay in their homes when they have major repairs that need done on their homes, or even minor repairs, but like things that were like electrical problems or plumbing problems or things that they couldn't really safely stay in their home unless we helped them out. So we want to continue to refer residents to that program. But the county has their funding for that program is through CDBG funding. and the county administers that, and the county has put a pause on all CDBG funding for this year. So in the past couple of months, I've referred several people over to the county or to the housing authority for their emergency repair program, and it turns out they don't have any funding. So I wanted to add an implementation strategy that we reboot the home repair grant program in North Salt Lake, but that it's a city-sponsored program instead of CDBG-funded. It could still be CDBG-funded potentially through the state, but I think there's a need there. And I think with this housing market, it's increasingly important for people to be able to stay in their homes and not have to try to find a replacement home right now. So I just wanted to add that implementation to create a city-sponsored home repair grant program. And the timing on that is within the next 2 years, because it's expected that by 2024, the CDBG program will be running again. Strategy 3.2 is the same. It just includes an implementation of referring residents to appropriate utility companies to participate in their weatherization programs and to advertise their programs on the city's website and social media. And then I think there's one more goal on the next slide. This is to reduce household transportation expenses for low to moderate income households. Strategy 4.1 is straight from state code, zone or rezone for higher density or moderate income residential development in commercial or mixed use zones near major transit investment corridors, commercial centers, or employment centers. And the part that's not underlined in implementation 4.1.1 is what we already had, which was to promote the establishment of low to moderate income housing in the town center so that it's more walkable and they have access to the transit. And I just say that this should be accomplished through the town center form-based code and in the interim through the P district rezoning process. Strategy 4.2, amend land use regulations to allow for higher density or new moderate income residential development in commercial or mixed use zones near major transit investment corridors. That one's really similar. Instead of rezoning, it's amending the land use regulations. So it's the same thing, adopting the form-based code. And then in the interim, using planned district development agreements in the town center. Strategy 4.3 is to amend land use regulations to eliminate or reduce parking requirements for residential development, where residents less likely to rely on the residents' own vehicles, such as residential development near major transit investment corridors or senior living facilities. And this is another one. We already had it in there to reduce the parking requirements in the town center. And so we just include in the implementation that this would be accomplished through the form-based code or the P district in the interim. I think that's it. I don't know if there's an, yeah, that's it. So in the state code, you're required to have at least three of their implementation strategies. But if you have five or more, then you get priority on some funding opportunities, some grant funding opportunities. So we have six in our plan, and it complies with state code. And so I would recommend that you forward this on to the city council with that one amendment from the previous slide, if you want to go back to one slide so they can read that one. Does anybody have any questions about this plan?
Thanks for your good work on this. I appreciate the presentation and explanation. So Commissioner Jorgensen, just a quick question. On that strategy 2.5, does the current drafts of the form-based code that we've been working on have this single room occupancy development in it? I didn't remember that per se, but I can go back and look.
I don't know for sure. I don't believe that it restricts. I don't think it regulates anything about bedroom size.
Yeah, and then if I understood
your bedroom number.
Okay, and then was it the one on Center Street just east of Highway 89 that you were thinking about that was in development weren't there
yes.
Some single room?
Yeah, Town Plaza. I don't know what it's being called now. Yeah. Sherry would know.
It's going to be called the Lofts at North Lake. And just to clarify, we don't regulate the bedroom count in the form-based code.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Allie or staff from the commission?
I just have one quick question. Allie, I appreciate the addition of that implementation strategy 3.1.2. I'm just curious. I really love that idea. Where is that grant program? How's that funded?
So the home repair grant program, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
It was previously, we did it for 4 or 5 years. And it was funded through CDBG funding, which is Community Development Block Grant Funds. Those, it's a HUD program, but it is administered through Davis County. And Davis County has been in some hot water with HUD with their administration of the CDBG program. So they put a pause on all funding this year. And the Housing Authority uses that same funding source for their some of their programs, like their emergency repair program, which is really similar. So there's nowhere to refer anybody right now. If they can't afford repairs on their home and they need repairs, there's nowhere to go right now. And so that implementation strategy seems pretty urgent. And I wanted to just put it into the plan to kind of put a bug in the ear of the Planning Commission and the City Council that this is a real priority.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree. Would that just be like general fund that the City Council would approve for that home?
Oh, sorry. Is that what you were asking? So we could potentially, it could be general fund, or we could potentially use the US 89 CDA funding. In the CDAs, there's a set aside funding at a certain percentage of the tax increment financing that you get. Has to be set aside for affordable housing programs. And so it could be used to build new affordable housing or subsidize affordable housing projects. I don't know 100%, but I am pretty sure that this would qualify.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And I just wanted to add that there could be other funding sources that we're not aware of, other grants that we might be able to find, or other charitable foundations that might be able to help fund that. So it's not necessarily general fund dollars, but we want it in there so that we can seek out funding from all these different sources to see if we can revamp that program and start it again.
Okay, while we are thinking about this and letting some of this process, I think we will open the public hearing and see if there are any public comments or input on this agenda item. So we will open the public hearing. If anyone is here to make a comment on this agenda item, now would be the time to come forward. And seeing as there's none, we will close the public hearing and continue with commissioner discussion and input or any thoughts on this update to the Moderate Income Housing Plan.
So this is Commissioner Jorgensen, and at the risk of being a little bit too nitpicky, the only thing that bothers me is I do think we want to distinguish between a full plan update and just a revision. So for example, you know, we didn't update the data, we're going to acknowledge that to the state, but if you were to read it, there are bits and pieces of the data that really appear dated. For example, 30-year mortgage interest rates and things like that. When you cite numbers in the plan, it just seems a little out of place. So I don't know, as a matter of plan hygiene, whether it would be possible to keep the original 2020 origin date and then just put a revision date, and then maybe there's a footnote that explains it. Again, I'm being a little nitpicky, but if you were to come and read it and somebody wanted to be critical of it, it would be very easy to find, you know, some pretty glaring examples like 30-year mortgage rates that are specifically cited, and they're, you know, much lower than they are today. And again, I will freely admit that that's a very nitpicky comment.
We could possibly include the revision date at the top, but then also have a footnote with the revision date down in this implementation section, so that it's clear that this is the section being updated.
When was the full revision target date, Allie? Because you were saying that you were just adding this as a a revision, but then was the general plan, what's the target for that?
So we have to have this revised in order to be in compliance with reporting requirements, and the reporting is due October 1st.
Okay.
So we would hope to have at least this section of the general plan updated by the reporting period for next year, which would be October 1st,
Excellent.
2023.
Great. I appreciate all the staff's work in getting the additional strategies in there to get the priority funding for the city. I think that's great to utilize any of those kind of state programs that we can to funnel more funding to the citizens and to North Salt Lake. So that's excellent that you guys added those additional items. Thank you for doing that. And anybody else have anything that they would like to talk about or talk through? If not, we can move to a motion, or if we're needing a little bit more time to process that, we can take a little time for that too.
I think it's worth noting also that we're already doing almost all of these. So it's just putting into the plan what we're already doing and putting deadlines or goals.
I'll make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the proposed moderate income housing element as an amendment to the City General Plan with one amendment under implementation 3.1.2 and subject to the following findings. The state legislature has determined that cities must facilitate a reasonable opportunity for a variety of housing, including moderate income housing, and the proposed draft meets the requirements of the state code to address moderate income housing.
Thank you. We have a motion, and do we have a second?
Commissioner Holbrook, second.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion?
So, again, my preference, I don't know whether this needs to be integrated, but just to be clear on the sections of the plan that are, in fact, being revised, as opposed to a full plan amendment, and I'm assuming that's something that can be done in the context of the motion that's been made.
We could even, I can even, I'm just not sure how to word that, but yeah, we can amend the motion to also add a condition that that it's made clear of what section is being amended with the addition of a date, a revision date.
Okay. So we have amended motion. That should be clear enough, Sherry, do you think?
Yes.
Okay. So we have an amended motion, and do we have a second?
I'll second it, Commissioner Jorgensen.
Okay, thank you. And any discussion on the amended motion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? And it passes. All right. Thank you, Allie. Thank you for all
thank
your
you.
Work, everybody, and the staff, too. And we will move to agenda item number 4, consideration of a preliminary plan approval for Clifton, located at approximately 2596 South and 1095 North Redwood Road. Taylor Spenlove, Brigham Brighton Homes as the applicant, and Mackenzie.
Okay, so this application came before you guys back in July under the name of Clifton Towns. You recommended approval to the City Council with the revision that they added more commercial. Originally, they just had the commercial up on the frontage of the corners. The City Council agreed with the site plan to extend the commercial, the entire frontage of Redwood Road on the northern property, but we're okay with allowing it to stay just on the corner of the southern property due to the uses on the other side. So on the north side of the property, there is an existing car dealership. So it's already like a commercial type of use. And then to the south of the south property, it's Hampton in place apartments. So it's residential. So to make it more of a cohesive and compatible flow, that's what the City Council came to. As a reminder, this is at the intersection of 1100 North and Redwood Road. The two parcels that we're looking at today are currently zoned general commercial, but they will be rezoned to P District, assuming that the City Council does approve that with the development agreement. So The parcel on the north side of the intersection is 6.12 acres, and the parcel on the south is 7.185 acres. The City Council, as I said before, approved the concept plan on July 19th. Clifton Place is going to consist of approximately 2.939 acres of commercial, and then 185 townhome dwelling units. Of those units, 75 will be two-bedroom, and 110 will be three-bedroom units. The plan calls for really good connectivity for the pedestrian access. There are amenities on the southern property that include a swimming pool with like a dressing room and also a bathroom, and then also some pickleball courts. So to allow access between the two, we are going to request that they put a crosswalk on 1100 North, but the city engineer hasn't told us where that crosswalk should be yet. So that is part of the red line. She's figuring out what the distance needs to be compliant with code, and then also what's safe. And so by the time they come back for final approval, we will have found that out. As far as the amenities go, like I said, they are proposing a tot lot on the northern property, pickleball courts and a swimming pool on the southern, and then there is open space throughout the development that is landscaped with grass. They have done a great deal of xeriscaping. As you can see here, this is a northern property on their landscape plan. Little less grass, but on the southern side, when they have those courtyards that are 50 feet apart from each other, they are having those with sod so kids can go out there and kick a ball and play and things like that. So 26% of the total residential development right now is landscaped. The commercial side of it, we don't know yet because we don't know what their uses are going to be. When they come through for site plan, they will just need to comply with whatever the standard is at the time. So like right now, they would have to comply with our new landscaping ordinance. As far as parking goes, the city code requires that if you have four or more dwelling units, you provide a total of 2.25 parking stalls per unit. This development is providing 2.9 parking stalls per unit on the northern property and 2.5 on the southern property. So either way, they are overparked in a good way compared to what our standard code is. As far as architecture goes, I have it on the screen what they've proposed. It includes masonry, brick, stucco, fiber cement board, and metal accents. Once again, we don't know what the commercial is going to be, so we tried to really narrow that down in the development agreement contents of where the building can be placed, how it can be placed. If it has a drive-through, it shouldn't be up on Redwood Road. And then also what the actual building looks like. So the colors should complement what is the residential development instead of being some big, vibrant color that's outside of it. And then also the materials should complement what's existing. And that's all laid out very clearly in the development agreement standards that I've attached to your packet. Some of the things that we are regulating on the commercial are massing materials, color grading, pedestrian access, and orientation, plus some. We tried to think about every scenario that we could where you might see a problem. Even like if you get a national, I don't know, Quick Quack, for example, a national company that wants to come and locate at that location and they have these big vibrant signs, we're going to require them that they change how they typically look in order to complement what is the complete development. So they couldn't come in with those big vibrant yellows and greens. They might have to modify them a little bit. And we did see this successfully happen at Village Station. As far as phasing goes, as I've said numerous times, commercial's happening separate. We don't know the timeline on that yet. But I do know the developer has prospective brokers, if not buyers, on the complete area. The residential will develop in four phases, just depending on how their financing ends up working out and how the sale of the property works out. I believe that the northern property, they're going to close on before they close on the southern or something like that. So the city feels comfortable as far as staff and the DRC go with their phasing plan as they've laid it out. And then as far as red lines go, we just have minor ones at this point. The city engineer hasn't conducted her full review yet, just because there are some changes that need to be made, such as on the northern property. This is actually a better example. There's unit 18, and that is right adjacent to South Davis Metro Fire's concrete area they have behind their building. I happen to know from past experience that they use that concrete area for testing on like burning vehicles and blasting and things like that that aren't necessarily compatible with a residential use. So South Davis Metro Fire also called that out and requested that the developer relocate unit 18 to allow more of a buffer space so that it will now be up next to unit 54, I believe, where there's that little bit of green space. So we're just doing a little swip swap between where that green space is and the unit is, and that'll just make it a more, are you laughing at swip swap? I'm very professional. but to make it just a better development and hopefully create less problems in the future for those residents. And the other red lines are just on the plat. We need them to renumber the units, and then potentially there may be some things regarding the grading and the drainage, but those are all very minor and not anything that the Planning Commission should be concerned about at this point. And we will require that all of those changes are corrected before we come back for final plat and final review of the development. Also, this development does comply with the general plan and the general outline of what the city is expecting at this location. And last but not least, you guys will see on all of your areas that I provided you a second copy of a corrected motion. In the motion, it should not just say that this is for the preliminary plan approval or recommending that to the city council. It should also say we're recommending approval of the preliminary plan and the plan district rezone or the P district rezone, which incorporates that general development plan component. So if you guys are okay with it, when you do your motion, please use the corrected one. The DRC is recommending approval of the preliminary plan and P district rezone with the conditions that, one, the correction of planning and engineering red lines prior to final plat review, and two, finalization of the development agreement, which will need to happen anyways in order to get to City Council. And I'm happy to answer any questions, and the applicant is here as well.
Great, thank you, Mackenzie. Any questions from the commission?
Mr. Spenlove, welcome back. Thanks for the work. On the northern side, is there an allowable entrance from Redwood? I didn't see that on...
Do you want to answer that? Yeah.
I'll yeah, answer. So we had a meeting with... I set up a meeting with UDOT to discuss access points and stuff. Sherry and Mackenzie were on that call. I had seen a map from them that showed access points kind of on the north property boundary and on the south property boundary of the south parcel. However, in their plan, they actually aren't allowing for accesses on to Redwood Road, which is...
From either south or north.
They said they could grant a variance, but they'd require a median, so it's only a right in and right out. So that's why you see the access point into the project on the east side of the north parcel, kind of splitting a shared access into the commercial and into the residential area there. So they would share that second access. It's kind of a bummer. We do have some retail groups looking at the project that are aware of the issue, and they're still very much interested in it. Ideally, you would have an access on Redwood, but UDOT's king at this point on this parcel. So, and it goes for the south parcel too. They were not amenable to any accesses onto Redwood. It's not in their plan.
And just so you guys know, we did take that into account when we were creating the commercial building regulations or supplemental regulations, such as with gas stations. We made the note that this, if the gas station were to go in at this location, it would be for passenger vehicles only, just because of the access problem. So the staff has thought about that and incorporated it into the development agreement.
Well, I, for one, agree with UDOT on this. And I actually like the traffic layout, the pedestrian amenities, and the landscaping of this layout very, very much. I think it's very well thought out. I think it's a good flow. And I think it's a really good job.
So just one quick question. Who would be responsible for maintaining that strip in 1100 North? The landscaping plan shows that as being landscaped.
So it's showing as landscape, but right now there's really nice existing landscaping. And if you look at the development agreement, the existing landscaping along the sides of the roads as well are to be preserved as much as possible. That currently is maintained by the Foxborough HOA. Now, if knowing our owner, he would love to maintain it because he likes to make sure that it's pristine. So, and it is, it looks really nice. But I think that's going to be a discussion between us and Foxborough HOA versus us in the city. But right now, it's being maintained by Foxborough HOA. And we use the same management company on all our HOAs that Foxborough uses, so it makes it easy.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah, sorry. Did you already say this? I can't remember. Sorry. I guess this isn't really in question right now, but like whether the commercial space, like, is it going to be facing outward or inward? Facing Redwood or...
So in the development agreement, we wrote into it that it needs to have a pedestrian presence. So it should be fronting either the Redwood Road or the 1100 North sidewalks. The intent is to have the parking on the back side of the building and as a buffer between the residential and commercial use.
Okay.
And so the intent is to have that commercial use pushed up closer to the street, closer to Redwood Road.
To Redwood, okay. On both sides.
Yes.
And south. Okay.
Yep. And this will go through the site plan process. When they do develop, they'll come back and we'll have a chance, because of the development agreement and the way it is written, to say, no, the development agreement says this, push it forward this many feet kind of thing. So,
okay. Thanks.
And with the no accesses on the Redwood Road, that makes a lot more sense.
All right, if there's no other discussion, we can move to a motion.
My first motion. This is Commissioner Stone. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval to the City Council of the preliminary design plan and P District rezone for Clifton Place, located at 2596 South and 1095 North Redwood Road, with the following conditions. One, correction of planning and engineering red lines prior to final plat review, and two, finalization of the development agreement.
Thank you. And do we have a second?
I'll second, Commissioner Tucker.
Thank you. Any discussion on that motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And it passes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Spendla, for being here. All right, we will move to agenda item 5, consideration of a preliminary plan and final plat approval for Phoenicia Place Subdivision, 480 North Cutler Drive. Brad Nielsen is the applicant, and Sherry.
This is definitely going to be the hardest application you process tonight. So you see this at concept plan back in July. It is a 4-acre parcel. It's fronts on Redwood Road and Cutler, just south of the Holiday gas station and the playfields that Spectrum Academy uses. So they are dividing it into two 2-acre lots. The one lot will front on Cutler, the other lot will front on Redwood Road. They've completed all of their red lines. In fact, our last set of red lines, it was returned in record time. So I gave them a gold star for their forehead. I thought that was pretty cool. But they've dedicated the additional right-of-way on Cutler. They've provided a pedestrian easement and dedication on the Redwood roadside so we can finish that one last little section of trail. That'll either be completed by us with grant money that we've gotten over the years or that we will get, or it will be completed by the commercial If a commercial use comes in, they'll be required to put in their section of that trail. So we're really excited to be able to have that parcel so that we can get the trail in for the entire length of Redwood Road. But we've made a favorable recommendation to the Planning Commission on the preliminary plan and final plat of the Phoenicia Place subdivision with no conditions.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for either staff or the applicant? Just as a reminder, are these both being used as like playfields for the school?
So the lot number two or one, I can't tell the number, it's too tiny. The one that's on the left, that one actually will be used and purchased by Spectrum Academy, and they'll be putting their playfields there, and then they'll be building another school just to the north of it where their playfields are right now.
Spectrum will be, or it's?
Spectrum will be.
Okay, that's excellent.
And then we don't know what the use will be for the other parcel that fronts Redwood Road yet.
Cool. All right. Any other questions? And we're ready for a motion. Or more discussion?
I'm happy to make a motion if someone can once again pronounce the name of the subdivision.
Phoenicia Place.
Phoenicia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Commissioner Holbrook, I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the approval of the proposed two-lot Phoenicia Place subdivision preliminary plan and final plat at 480 North Cutler Drive with no conditions.
Thank you. And a second?
Commissioner Jorgensen, I second.
Thank you. Any discussion, comment on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
And any opposed? And it passes. All right, Mr. Nielsen, I'm assuming we didn't have you come forward, so thank you for being here and look forward to seeing that develop down there. And we will move to agenda item number 6, report on City Council items.
Did you, I was listening to Mackenzie, so did you?
Yes, okay. Let's do City Council items.
So it's been just a crazy summer and a crazy couple weeks for all of us, I'm sure. So just to give you a couple of updates about what's going on, because you may have seen some chatter on social media. So the County Commission has approached and often asked us in the last couple of years to annex that unincorporated area that's between North Salt Lake and Bountiful. That's called the Valverde area. And so we've finally been able to get to a point where we can start entertaining that. So what has happened is last Thursday, the county sent out public notices of public hearing to all of the residents, all the property owners and residents in that area. They will be having a public hearing on September 27th to make a recommendation to the city to annex that area. Under the state code, there is a provision that islands of unincorporated area can be annexed without a petition by the area residents if the county makes a formal finding and with recommendations to the City Council, and then the City Council also adopts it. So what will happen is on the 27th, if the County Commission makes that recommendation to us, then the next step will be the City Council will adopt a resolution that expresses their intent to annex the area and schedule a public hearing. Their public hearing would then be scheduled for November 15th. And the timing on this is really weird because the way the state code is written on annexation, it's just a mess. And so there's all these weird deadlines, like the county has to send notices 15 days in advance of their public hearing, and then once they have their public hearing and make the recommendation to us, we have to hold our public hearing no more than 30 days after their public hearing, no less than 30 days after their public hearing. But then we have to provide a notice of that public hearing with 21 days notice. Like there's like literally four or five different number things that we had to work backwards for to see, to make sure we could get this done. But that's where we stand right now. As of today, there are some citizens in that area that are not interested in annexing, and they're working together to file a petition to protest it. There are some rules in state code on this particular type of annexation, And even if the property owners meet the thresholds to grant the or to meet the thresholds of number of signatures for a protest, because the county commission will recommend that we annex it, the city council can actually consider that annexation without regard to that protest. So that could be quite controversial, but on the other side of that, even if they do accept the protest, what happens with the protest is the protest goes to the Boundary Commission, the County Boundary Commission. The County Boundary Commission can look at three things only under state law. The first is, does the petition meet the threshold? Do they have enough signatures of people who own more than 50% of the area and more than 50% of the assessed land value? That's the first thing. The second thing is this area within the annexation declaration of another municipality? No, it's not in the annexation policy plan for Bountiful City. So that's the second no. And then the third thing would be, is would annexing this area have a negative fiscal impact on the remainder of the unincorporated county? And the reason that the state statute was written that way was because of Salt Lake County and the cities in Salt Lake County of the first class, because they used to go and annex like a Walmart and maybe like the Fort Union area, like Sandy would go in and annex all of Fort Union, but leave all the houses around it. And so those people who are left in the unincorporated county now don't have a tax base to support the services that they're getting. So that was the specific reason that that is written that way. That is not happening in this case. And so for those reasons, the Boundary Commission would have absolutely no reason to say that the city could not annex it. And it really would be quite fruitless for those property owners to go and collect 158 property owners' signatures at least, because that's the minimum. There's 314 homes in there. So we've been trying to do some public education on our website. I have posted today some frequently asked questions. It's a 6-page document that shows all of the steps and all of what I've just described, as well as some of the advantages of why you might want to be annexed into North Salt Lake, including that your property taxes will go up $70 a year, but your garbage collection bills will go down $21 a year. You will receive much faster response time from the North Salt Lake City Police Department. You'll receive better snow plowing in a timely manner. Many times those streets are not plowed until very last because those plow trucks have to come from Farmington and go in, you know, a lot bigger areas, and that they're just spread thin. It's just not efficient for the county to provide services. And it's not in, the county doesn't desire to keep that area anymore. Their general plan specifically says we should encourage these areas to be annexed because they're already urbanized, they're not going to be annexed naturally, and they need to be within the city where the services can be provided. So if you get calls or your neighbors ask you questions about them, feel free to tell them to call our office or look on our website. If they go to the community development page and then in under annexations, they will find that document. And we're happy to direct them to that if they don't understand how to get to the webpage. They can just give us a call and we'll help them and email them the documents. But I did want to make you aware about that because there's been a lot of chatter on social media today. And not just on one side. There have been plenty, at least our city manager spent an hour on the phone with somebody who's in favor of the annexation that lives in there. And his reasoning was because of the police response from sheriffs. In fact, one of our city council members was telling me this morning that his granddaughter was in a car accident in that area. Nobody was hurt, and he had to go up and assist her, and the North Salt Lake police responded within 3 or 4 minutes, but because the streets were all county streets, they had to wait for the sheriff, and that was an hour for the sheriff to respond.
Is there any particular reason why this is happening in September of 2022?
So the reason it's happening now is because the county commission would like to see it done before the end of this year. And so we just hadn't been able to align all of the parties that were in agreement that wanted to go ahead and consider this. And so the county commissioners over the summer, we've seen them a couple times, and they're like, hey, when are we going to get that done? Hey, when are you going to get that done? And the county council said to me, hey, when are you going to get that done? And I said, I'm going to have a meeting with the county, Jeff Euler, their planning director up there. He and I sat down about a month ago to kind of figure out what the steps were. The state code in this area is extremely complicated. I've read it inside and out and outlined it and highlighted it up one side and down the other to make sure I understand it. I outlined it and had our attorney review it and make sure that I was understanding the process correctly. So those things have just taken a little bit of time this summer, but when we work backwards with the dates so that the effective date would be January 1 of 2023, that those folks would become part of our community, we felt like that would be a good time for that, because taxes for the new year would be, you know, we wouldn't have to split it with the county or something if we did the annexation in, you know, July or something. And we would, you know, just the election years and those types of things, it would make it easier, the transition for those property owners, we hope.
And so, none of this runs through us.
None of this will, well, what will run through you once we get into this is the recommendation on what the zoning should be on that property. So if you are interested, you can go to our website and look at that frequently asked questions. I have provided in it a summary of what the zoning is on those properties in the county, as well as what they are would or what the equivalent would be in North Salt Lake. We don't have to go with that exactly. We can pick whatever zone we want, or we can recommend whatever zone you want to the city council. But that was kind of just my basis for starting. I basically said, we haven't determined what the zoning would be, but here's what the four zoning categories are that you have in this area for the county. Here's what the equivalent zoning categories would be for North Salt Lake. So they have a couple little pockets of multifamily zoning. They have two areas, two different zones for, one's a single family zone, one's a two-family zone. Both have minimum lot sizes of 9,000 square feet. So it's similar to ours. Our R110 is a 10,000 square foot lot. Our R17 is a 7,000 square foot lot. So we're somewhat similar in the restrictions. Some of ours are a little, like we allow a height to go to 35 feet. Their code only allows 30 feet. Anybody who's in that area, if they have a use that would not be permitted once it was annexed into the city, they would actually be grandfathered. So as long as they were legally existing in the county that had been legally approved, they didn't do something contrary to the county code, then they would be able to continue that in the city. So just if you get that question, that's a, but those frequently asked questions will give you a really good background of what you might want to answer if someone asks you a question about that. But one of the benefits I put in there was that they would have the opportunity to run for city council or to serve on one of our many committees, the Planning Commission included, Parks and Rec, or even the Health and Wellness Committee. You know, we have lots of fun committees. Okay, this one's the funnest though, you guys, really. So that is where we are with that. We haven't had any Planning Commission items recently that have gone to the City Council. We'll have these two items go next week. And we will be getting back on the form-based code very, very soon. It's on my to-do list of getting all of that organized, but my to-do list just keeps getting full of weird things like spend the entire day talking to people about this annexation and figuring out what to put on the website. Mm-hmm. Seems like it. I'm a fireman. Sometimes I run around and putting out fires, but we do have it on our radar, and I promise you we will get right back to it almost very soon with it, probably the first part of October.
Great. Okay, thank you. And then approval of the minutes from 8-9. Any adjustments, amendments to those minutes? If not, we can do a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I make a motion that we approve the meeting minutes as drafted for August 9, 2022.
Thank you. And a second?
Second, this is Commissioner Moss.
Thank you. Any comment? All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. And we are adjourned.
one more thing.